Up next on our Country Music Week series, an interview from our archive with Waylon Jennings. He started his career playing with Buddy Holly and went on to change the sound of country music as a creator of the country outlaw movement. Along with Willie Nelson, he originated a sound with less strings and more rock rhythms and an image with no sequence. Being an outlaw was a very rewarding experience. Jennings had 16 number one singles and several gold and platinum albums. He also performed with Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, and Willie Nelson as the group The Highwaymen. A lot of people knew him as the narrator of the TV series The Dukes of Hazzard. He also sang the theme. Waylon Jennings died in 2002 of complications from diabetes. He was 64. Let's start with a title track from his popular 1973 album Honky Tonk Heroes. The song is written by Billy Joe Shaver.
Where does it go? The good Lord only knows. Seems like it was just the other day. I was down at Green Gables, hawking them tables, and generally blowing all my hard-earned pay. Piano road blues, danced holes in my shoes. There weren't another way to be. For lovable losers, no account boozers, and honky-tonk heroes like me. Hey, hey.
I spoke with Waylon Jennings in 1996 after the publication of his autobiography.
Did you have a sense as a young man of what your own music was?
Now, you know, no, I didn't. I was just like everybody else. I heard somebody I liked. I loved Hank Williams. I loved Carl Smith and Ernest Tubb. And I wanted to sound like all of them. And I was in Phoenix and in a club before I really realized that I was different and that no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't imitate nobody.
What made you realize that at this club?
Well, the thing was, I was writing songs and they sounded different. They sounded, you know, I thought, man, mine don't sound like anybody else's, you know, which I didn't realize was good. You know, I thought, but you couldn't imagine it being played on radio because I would use calypso beats and hard rhythms and what have you, and they wouldn't have fit at all in on the radio in country music that way. But the way I developed my style really was getting bored. I would be in a nightclub and play for 4 hours. And you sing the song like somebody that, the guy that wrote it, or the guy that sang it. And I got tired of that, so I started changing the rhythms and maybe giving it a heavier beat and just rearranging the song to fit what I felt. And it worked.
So what was the moment in which you were discovered?
Well, you know, Bobby Bear is one of the great country singers of all time. And he came through Phoenix, and he came over to this club where I was working and just flipped out. He heard, you know, we had our own sound, and I was telling you a while ago, I had my own way of doing songs and own rhythms, and I could sing, and on a lot of them, that helps. Well, he's playing there in Nashville, and in Phoenix, and then he's going from there to Vegas. Well, the next day when he left to Vegas, he stopped at every phone booth he saw, and he hounded Chet Atkins, saying, "You got to sign this guy." I said, this guy deserves to be on a major label. Finally, Chet called me to get Bobby Bear to shut up and said, he's so laid back and everything. He said, we'd like to have you with RCA. He said, I like what you do. He had heard some of my demos and whatever. And he said, would you like to sign with us? And, of course, you know, that's the right hand of God is Chet Atkins. And so I signed with him, and that was it. Chet signed me without ever seeing me. You can't do that nowadays.
Why don't we hear one of the records that Chet Atkins produced of yours? And this was also your first single to reach number one on the country charts, recorded in 1968. This is Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line. Do you want to say anything about this?
Yeah, that song, Chet is all over that. Wayne Moss is playing the guitar on it, and the band is wonderful. And this song was out by someone else. And I said, well, I'd love to do that, but I'm going to give him a chance. So I waited 6 months, and then he re-released it. And I had to wait another 6 months to do it because I wasn't going to cover him.
Everybody knows you've been stepping on my toes, and I'm getting pretty tired of it. You keep a stepping out of line and a messing with my mind. If you had any sense, you'd quit. 'Cause ever since you were a little bitty teeny girl, said I was the only man in this whole world. Now you better do some thinking, then you'll find you got the only daddy that'll walk the line. I keep a working every day, all you wanna do is play. I'm tired of staying out all night. I'm a coming unglued from your funny little moods. Now, honey, baby, that ain't right. 'Cause ever since you were a little bitty teeny girl, you said I was the only man in this whole world. Now you better do some thinking, then you'll find you got the only daddy that'll walk the line.
My guest, Waylon Jennings, recorded in 1968. In your book, you write, the more your records sold, the further they receded from what you had in mind, the sound you wanted to hear. What did you want, and what did you feel you were getting instead?
I wanted to recognize a record. I would do a tracks, and I'd come back, and they had put horns and all kinds of things on it. This was when Danny Davis started producing me. Chet was trying to get away from producing and more back into his own artistry and playing guitar more. And he put me with Danny Davis, and he was just overworked. But anyway, what I wanted to hear was what I was feeling and what I had in mind. It was kind of like it's kind of like a painting. I don't know, it sounds corny, I guess, but to me it was. I could write a song or find a song I like, and I could describe to you what it was going to sound like when I got through. And I got into a position where it didn't. And that's very frustrating and drive you crazy.
Now, I want to just take a little sidestep here into a tangent. I can't remember who was producing the session. It might have been Herb Alpert, where you decided that you just couldn't stand pickup notes. You took a gun. You took a gun and said what?
I took it in the studio, but it was... I think at on that session, I think that was, I'm not sure, Danny Davis. And that was after Herb Alpert. Herb Alpert would have thrown something at me. But I did go in there. And what had happened is I'd loaned Harlan Howard.
The songwriter.
My gun. It was a bunt line. He took it out in his fishing boat. And Merle Haggard wound up with it somehow, and he brought it back to me. And so I just put on the holster, you know, I still got it and everything, and put it on. And I went in there, and I thought, well, and there were some British journalists were in there in the studio, in the little studio there at RCA. I walked in, and I said, now, the first guy that I hear use a pickup note, I'm going to shoot his fingers off. And the guy that's sitting there looking at those numbers on that paper, after the third rundown, I'm going to just kill him. Anyway, later on, I met John Lennon. And, we were cutting up and everything at one of the Grammy things. And I said, "Man, you're a lot of, you're funny. I didn't know you were funny." I said, "I thought you were some kind of mad guy or something like that." And he said, "Me?" He said, "Listen, people in England think you shoot folks."
No, explain for people who don't know written music what pickup notes are, and then tell us why you're so opposed to them.
Well, you know, it gives it away. You know, it goes dun 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 dun. You know, like, and there you know, why not just keep it rolling and rolling and having a good time, and then come in where you're supposed to, and you haven't given everything away. You know, that's what pickup notes do, and it's an easy way too, because it keeps. You know, you don't have to pay that much attention when you hear a pickup note coming. You know, you got to change keys.
So it's just all becoming formula to you.
It was all formula. It was like cookie cutters. You know, everything you did. And hear these guys playing four sessions a day sometime. How creative can you be? You know? And they wouldn't let you use your own band. They didn't want you to use your... I'm not saying one thing bad about the musicians here. They're the greatest musicians in the world because... I mean, they had that number system, and for that music, it was wonderful. I just didn't like, you know, pickup notes, like I said. It's like, doom, 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 oh, I'm a good guy, doom, 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 doom. That was it.
How did the Outlaw name come about?
I had an album on RCA, and it was called Ladies Love Outlaws, which was after a song, you know, and they kind of picked it up there. And then when in search of something, they called me everything for a long time. They called me outlaw. They called me rebel. They didn't know quite what pocket to put me in. but that's where it started originally. And then when they decided to put out the album with me and Tom, Paul, Jesse, and Willie, they used it there, and it kind of caught on.
That's the album Wanted the Outlaws, which was the first country album to sell a million, I think.
It was, yeah.
Why don't I play one of the recordings featured on the Wanted the Outlaws album that you did with Willie Nelson, Jesse Coulter. This is something you co-wrote with Willie Nelson, and you both sing on it. And it's A Good-Hearted Woman, which you also recorded on your own. Tell me about this particular track.
That song, Willie and I wrote that while we were playing poker one time in a hotel with Billy Gray and Paul English.
Wait, you were playing poker with Billy Graham?
Billy Gray.
Oh. I thought that sounded improbable.
Billy Graham cheats. We don't let him play no more. But anyway, so I was recording the next day, and I said, "Willie, I like two lines in this song. You help me get them, and I'll give you half this song." So we did, but we wrote it while we was playing poker. Now, we lost our rears in that poker game, but we got a pretty good song.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Hey, I've enjoyed it. I really have. You got some good questions there, girl.
Well, thank you.
Waylon Jennings recorded in 1996. He died in 2002 of complications from diabetes. Our Country Music Week continues tomorrow. You'll find links to all the interviews in the series on nprmusic.org. Here's Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson singing a song they co-wrote, A Good-Hearted Woman.
A long time forgotten, your dreams are just fell by the way. Good life he promised ain't what she's living today.
Really?
But she never complains of the bad times or the bad things he's done, Lord.
Yeah.
She just talks about the good times they've had and all the good times to come. She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good-timing man. She loves him in spite of his ways she don't understand. Through teardrops and laughter they pass through this world hand in hand. A good-hearted woman. good time.